The leaders of the Group of 20 representing the world's largest economies began their two-day meeting at Cannes, France, earlier today, and the atmosphere surrounding the meetings can charitably be described as tense. Joining me now for a look at what's come out of the first day of meetings so far and what we might expect are Gillian Tett, U.S. Managing Editor of the Financial Times, and from Cannes, Liz Alderman, Business and Finance Correspondent for the New York Times. I'm very pleased to welcome them to our show for today's Backstory segment. Hello.
Hi there. Hello.
Wasn't the planned focus of the summit to address Europe's debt crisis? Has Greece become the topic of conversation instead, or has this been something that's been expected for a long time?
Greece has certainly dominated this conference, and it all started last night when the Greek Prime Minister, Mr. Papandreou, indicated that he was going to call a referendum on the aid package that its European partners had given it. This obviously threw things into a tailspin. It sent markets worldwide down and it generated a great deal of consternation here. President Nicolas Sarkozy of France and Angela Merkel of Germany, the Chancellor of Germany, basically called Mr. Papandreou to the carpet and asked him to explain himself. And for the first time, at least last night, the possibility was raised that perhaps Greece might actually leave the Eurozone. That is reversed dramatically today with the Greek Prime Minister suddenly scrapping this controversial plan to hold a referendum. And, you know, we'll see if this means that the crisis is over. I think it actually is still far from over.
Do you think that he scrapped it because of pressure from Angela Merkel and Sarkozy?
Those were certainly the indications. The most important thing for both of those leaders is that the Eurozone stay together. Mr. Papandreou obviously has significant challenges at home with people marching in the streets, a very significant austerity plan that's weighing very heavily on the people, and that was his reason for trying to go ahead and hold the referendum. But certainly there was a lot of pressure from his peers after they had spent a significant amount of energy last week putting together a grand rescue plan that would help Greece as well as support the Eurozone itself.
Gillian, the slogan of the summit is L'histoire s'écrit en Cannes, which translates to history as being written in Cannes. That's rather grand, isn't it? But is it also true?
Well, I think it is, because the crucial thing to understand about Greece is that it's really just the flashpoint, if you like, or the lightning rod for problems besetting the entire Eurozone. Just as Lehman Brothers was the lightning rod for problems across the entire financial sector back in 2008. And it's not just about fixing Greece or getting a quick fix for Greece. It's really about addressing much more fundamental issues right across the Eurozone. And frankly, there is no real resolution of that on the table right now. So, you know, when future historians look back at Cannes, I think they're more likely to conclude that this was a moment when the politicians gathered together and yet again failed to find any real solutions until they were forced to by full-scale market turmoil.
Are there still a lot of divisions between the G20 countries at this point, 3 years into the global financial meltdown?
There are a lot of divisions, and the fundamental problem right now is that the solution to a large extent lies in the hands of Germany. The Germans are very unwilling to fund the rest of the Eurozone at the moment. The Americans are very frustrated because they don't have the ability to force resolution, and yet they can see their own financial markets and the economy being affected very badly. So frankly, you know, what's happened is that the fractures are being exposed rather than a sense of healing. And in some ways, the challenges now are even worse than they were in 2008.
Liz, is the feeling that the announcement of a referendum in Greece on Monday, was that seen as a domestic political ploy by Papandreou?
It certainly was, you know, dominated by domestic political considerations. You have a pretty harsh austerity plan that is being imposed on Greece by its European partners in exchange for the substantial aid that they're receiving. And certainly Mr. Papandreou, his logic at least was that, you know, this is something that we need effectively the government to, you know, throw its full weight behind, given the number of people that we see out on the streets.
But isn't it likely that the Greek voters would have rejected the austerity measures that were required by the bailout plan, the same way that the voters in Iceland rejected a very harsh austerity plan that was being imposed on them?
It certainly would have been a very high possibility, and that's what threw markets into a tailspin and, frankly, all of the politicians here into a panic.
But, I mean, if I can just jump in there.
Of course, Julia.
The key thing to understand was 2008 was really about financial sector turmoil. What we're seeing now is a natural extension of that, which is not just economic turmoil, but severe political turmoil and social turmoil. And the kind of really serious political tensions we're seeing developing in Greece are likely to be reflected elsewhere across the Western world as these fundamental economic and financial pressures keep mounting.
Well, some people, as you said earlier, are suggesting that the best solution would be for Greece to pull out of the eurozone. Do you think that that would be likely? Could Greece just return to the drachma without serious consequences?
Well, it's absolutely being debated right now. And the very important thing that's happened in the last 24 hours is that people have actually openly acknowledged that it could happen at the senior levels of the European leadership, because until recently that was not even being acknowledged. But let no one make any mistake that a pullout by Greece would be extremely messy. It's very hard to detach the financial systems smoothly. Of course, it's possible, but nobody wants it at the moment in the senior group of European leaders.
Liz, are people in Cannes talking about that possibility?
I mean, that was certainly, you know, a possibility that people had expressed concern about when Mr. Papandreou first brought up the idea of the referendum. But as Julian said, that's really not at all a solution that anybody wants. France and Germany don't want it. You know, that being said, what needs to be considered going forward if Greece does stay in the eurozone is how Greece is able to get itself out of the hole that it's in right now. The IMF has said that Greece might actually need to rely on international financial support for as many as the next 9 years. So does that mean that we're going to go through this exercise over and over again each time its international partners need to give it another tranche of aid? That's something that would be destabilizing, and that's an issue that leaders need to figure out.
Has the panic subsided a little bit with the news that the referendum has been scrapped? Or are people still really on edge?
Well, I mean, just in terms of the financial market, which is what I'm looking at, in the short term, it's good news that the referendum has been scrapped. In the medium to long term, though, the type of political pressures that prompted Papandreou to talk about a referendum have not gone away. And what people have really realized in the last 24 hours is just how much unpredictable instability there is right now across the region. Everyone was blindsided by the referendum idea. And so what people are asking is, what on earth is going to blindside them next?
You wanted to give us an answer as well, Liz?
No, I mean, I think that's absolutely right. The prospect of, you know, continued, you know, instability in Greece and sort of the idea that it's not only Greece but a number of these other European countries that are facing a lot of austerity means that, you know, many of them are facing the same issues that are going to be pose significant challenges to these leaders. As the euro moves forward, and this is a huge test. It's a historic moment for the euro in terms of, you know, the leaders' ability to keep things together.
Well, it's estimated that the Greek government will run out of money by mid-December if it doesn't get another infusion of capital. And we're talking about 8 billion euros. Will they receive those funds now because they've decided not to hold the referendum? Do we know, Jillian?
Well, that is the expectation. There's a lot of games of chicken going on right now, and people are trying to threaten each other and blackmail each other. I say, once again, it's a very, very unseemly way to do business. And one way to look at the summit in Cannes is to recognize that this is probably the first crisis since the collapse of the Bretton Woods Agreement back in the 1970s, when there really isn't anybody who's properly in charge and able to resolve it. I mean, the Americans can't fix this problem. The Eurozone leaders, Angela Merkel and Sarkozy, are still very divided and not very effective. It's unclear whether they can force things on Greece without this kind of grandstanding we've seen in the last 24 hours about this referendum issue. So there's a real sense of vacuum and drift and fragmentation.
My guests are Gillian Tett, U.S. Managing Editor for the Financial Times, and Liz Alderman, Business and Finance Correspondent for the New York Times. She's in Cannes. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, the Eurozone has tried to attract Chinese investment into their most recent plan, if nobody else can come to the rescue. But Reuters has reported that the Chinese people are resisting the idea. So how necessary is that outside investment to shoring up confidence in Europe?
I mean, it's not necessarily financially, because the Eurozone has enough money inside its borders to fix it. I mean, that's a bitter irony of what's going on, is that actually, if you look at the Eurozone fundamentals as a single region, it's in many ways better than the U.S. You know, people were looking to China as some gesture of solidarity and support. The Chinese are extremely wary of jumping in, though, because they had their fingers burned in 2008 when they stepped in to help some U.S. banks. And there's strong domestic opposition to getting too involved too far.
Mario Draghi, the new head of the European Central Bank, officially started his job on Tuesday. Do the Eurozone members have a lot of confidence in his ability to lead the ECB?
Well, certainly one of the things that many people had expected was that the previous president of the ECB, Jean-Claude Trichet, might have corrected what many people saw as a mistake in raising interest rates earlier this year, despite clear signs that a recession was coming on. He left the court open for Mr. Draghi to do that, and it came as a bit of a surprise that he went ahead and lowered those interest rates on basically, you know, the first week that he took over as ECB president. That being said, there are clear signs, even though the ECB's mandate is to ensure price stability, there are clear signs that the Eurozone is headed into a recession. So this is seen as something that is going to be necessary to kind of, you know, help Europe deal with the economic growth problem.
He cut the ECB's interest rates to 1.25%, 1.25%. That's pretty low. He said that the only so-called haircuts that he foresees are for Greece, not any of the other Eurozone countries, even though a number of them are in serious trouble, aren't they?
Well, certainly, if you look at the way that the markets are currently pricing the debt of Portugal or Ireland, and the way that prices are moving in what's called the credit default swap market, and certainly investors are pricing in or assuming there's going to be further losses on other Eurozone bonds. And frankly, it really is all eyes on Draghi right now, because what he did with the interest rates to a certain extent is a sideshow. The big question that everyone in the markets wants to know is, will Draghi come in and actually support or underwrite Italian and Spanish and Portuguese debt to a greater extent than he has them already via the ECB? Because in some ways, the ECB is the only institution now which can really come in and fire that bazooka, to use Hank Paulson's, Treasury Secretary Paulson's phrase from back in 2008 when he created the TARP plan, and that the ECB could come in and prop up the market by buying Eurozone bonds, but until now on a large scale. But until now, it's been very wary to do that too enthusiastically for fear of making the ECB itself insolvent.
Well, Liz, there have been major concerns for a long time about Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, who barely survived a vote of no confidence last month, and his ability to reform the Italian economy and strengthen investor confidence. Has there been an indication in recent weeks that he'll be able to push those reforms through? The cost of borrowing in Italy remains very high, doesn't it?
I mean, that's certainly one of the big concerns right now. The cost of borrowing has shot up once again, despite all of the efforts to keep those borrowing costs low. Remember that high borrowing costs are what drove other countries, such as Ireland and Portugal, to ask for a bailout. You know, whether Mr. Berlusconi, as we've seen, things are run as a bit of a circus over there, at least in the eyes of many observers, and they have brought forward, you know, a pretty significant austerity plan a while back that they then proceeded to water down, but now they look like they're trying to beef up again, and it's really going to be up to, obviously, the government to make sure that that is pushed through in order to keep Italy's interest rates from borrowing rates from spiraling out of control. Italy is certainly turned into, next to Greece, you know, the center of the storm right now. And a lot of these efforts that the European leaders have been making in terms of bringing forward a grand plan are aimed specifically at trying to prevent this crisis that began in Greece from engulfing large countries like Italy.
Well, Jillian, do you think that Berlusconi would survive another confidence vote?
I think it's a very tough call. I mean, after the events in Greece in the last 24 hours, you know, nothing can be ruled out. And what your listeners in America need to remember is that Italy is not some tin-pot banana republic. It's one of the largest bond markets in the world. And if the Italian bond market really does go into a tailspin, that's going to have very big financial repercussions that affect America too.
And what about France? Isn't France, which is hosting the summit, aren't there concerns about the stability of its economy? Have those died down in recent weeks, or have they just been eclipsed by all of these recent events?
Certainly, one of President Sarkozy's biggest concern is whether France will be able to keep its sterling AAA rating going forward. One of the big concerns that French leaders have long held is at some point, if they wind up effectively spending too much money on this crisis, that rating could be compromised. For the moment, France is fairly safe, but it has certainly moved into the sort of discussion as to whether it might be vulnerable.
Now, Jillian, there's been talk of the UK Parliament about leaving the European Union. Is that something we should take seriously?
Well, once again, it's a sign of the social and political stresses that are building. There's very strong business opposition to any move that would see the UK withdraw from the European Union. So I think it's pretty unlikely to happen. But at the same time, there's very profound opposition to the idea of joining the euro, given that the euro is such a mess. So the big question that people are looking at is, well, if one outcome of this crisis is that perhaps some of the Eurozone countries band together much more closely than ever before and effectively create the United States of Europe, if you like, where will that leave people who are in the sort of second tier semi-detached status like the UK? Now, we don't yet know whether there will be a United States of Europe, but there certainly is a lot of concern. And I guess, once again, the key point is that the tectonic plates of the Eurozone are shifting very fast. And the range of outcomes of what could happen, never mind in the next year, but in the next week or two, are pretty wide.
Now, what about the United States of America, Liz? What's our role in this summit? Our economic issues seem to be very much in the background, but aren't there a lot of concerns that the Eurozone debt crisis could affect our markets and our economy if it continues to get worse?
Well, in many ways, the Eurozone debt crisis has already affected the U.S. economy. At least that's what President Obama, Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner, and others have been warning for quite some time now. President Obama was here today, and he urged Europe to basically get its economic house in order. The concern is that, you know, if the crisis were to deteriorate further, that the impact, you know, to the real economy in the United States at a time when it's trying to recover would be fairly significant. And that in addition, if things were to worsen, the situation would pose an additional challenge, certainly for the many banks that also hold a lot of the bonds of countries in Europe that have come under fire or have looked a lot weaker as a result of this crisis.
Have many protesters? Go ahead.
I was going to say the one thing is I've just come back from Washington. I'm in New York at the moment, and I mean the one thing that Americans have to be grateful for right now is that this intense focus on the Eurozone means that at least people aren't worrying too much or watching too closely the fact that the efforts to resolve the U.S. fiscal problem are running into the sand. There's not a lot of progress being made right now in terms of the bipartisan committees.
Liz, are many protesters in Cannes?
There's quite a lot of protesters in Nice, actually. They're being kept away from the summit. As you can imagine, there's very high security here. But, you know, the protesters, just as we've seen, you know, with the on Wall Street, the protests there, you know, their concerns are the same. They feel that, you know, things are being dictated by powerful people who don't understand their needs and by bankers who are not being made to pay for a crisis that many people feel that they started.
I want to thank you both so much for being on our show today on this backstory look at the G20 summit in Cannes. Liz Alderman is the business and finance correspondent for the New York Times. She's in Cannes. Jillian Ted is the U.S. managing editor for the Financial Times. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.